Welcome to the 47th Monkey My Back podcast. Contact us at momcast@gmail.com, where you can leave us suggestions on how to avoid summertime travel chaos, as well as anything comic book related you think we should... Tonight on the pod, we talk around our spinning orders, lament the loss of some old webcomic favourites, and in the spotlight, Jane discusses American Virgin. Momcast, the comic podcast that wants to take the long inflatable blue slide into unemployment and infamy, and that also may or may not be a hot piece of ass. Around the mic tonight are...
Nick!
Hello, I'm Jane.
Hi, I'm James.
You said Virgin.
Yeah, I did. I don't think anyone will notice that I cocked out the very beginning bit, will I?
No,
you rewound and started again, didn't you?
I thought I recouped really nicely.
You did, yeah, that was a Mr. T-worthy recouping.
Yeah, I did a bit of verbal breakdance. Yeah. It was good.
I liked it. Yeah, I wish it was in 3D, like Step Up 3D.
Oh, why? Could have gone the rest of my life without...
I saw a clip of it on YouTube the other day, and it really looked good, actually.
They do. They're so bright and vibrant and vivacious, the people in it, aren't they?
Most things, like Clash of the Titans, you can live without being in 3D. But I think the dance moves, they're kind of... It's like all popping and locking and the head's moving.
Yeah. Dancing youngsters in 3D. I mean, it makes me lament the long-lost halcyon days of my youth.
Mm.
But it also, at the same time, makes me feel energised and optimistic for the future.
I want them to go back in time and film Flashdance with 3D technology so I can look at the lady in Flashdance in 3D all the time.
When I was a young boy in a young person's organisation, I was out with a young person's organisation at a camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the cinema towards the end of the week camping, and the older members of the team went to see Flashdance and we went to see Superman 3.
Oh.
Yeah,
I wish I'd seen Flashdance.
Yeah. Looking at how things have turned out, yeah, definitely.
Although I enjoyed the video game bit at the end.
Yes. Funnily enough, the little symbol you did, which was like the Atari joystick thing, very similar to how I feel about Flashdance.
Really?
Yeah, very similar indeed.
Right.
I'm not sure what you mean by that, unless by that you mean you want to masturbate when you watch it.
I watched Flashdance and thought, there's dancing, this is good, she's pretty, there's dancing, this is all, and the music's quite nice and stuff. Mm. And then there's a whole mutual masturbation scene in, and I was very young when I watched Flashdance. I did not know what was going on.
You can't have been that young.
I don't remember that.
I think
part.
I was about 14.
Okay.
It felt quite young at the time.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it on television, I hadn't seen it on a screen before.
Okay.
It was, yeah, no, it's, do you not remember that bit, Jane?
No.
We should watch it.
Together with some lotion.
Aww. And I thought that was the best I was going to ever see of Jennifer Beals, and then we watched the 5 seasons of The L Word, which are extremely explicit. She still looks good, though, that lady.
Absolutely. Well done her on retaining her beauty.
Yeah. That's not all a woman has to be, though, James.
Is it? No, it isn't. No, yeah, sorry. That's right. Hold on, I have it written on a piece of card here. No, it's not.
So what have you guys been up to this week? Anything good?
I caught up on all my comics this week.
You did?
Yes.
Ah. Have you read the books I got you yet for your birthday?
No, not those.
So you haven't caught up on all the books?
Okay, well, my floppy comics I've caught up on.
Floppy virgins.
I still have to read all the hardbacks.
God. James?
I'm going to call out a physician to you. I've been battling summer holiday travel chaos on the trains of Hampshire, which has been fun.
Has it been? Has it really been fun? That sounds like irony to me.
It's been hell on earth.
You have to go to work, you're standing on a platform, and they stand in front of you, and you've been standing there longer. You don't do that in a bus queue. Why is it acceptable on a train station?
And you have to be polite with people with kids and let them on the train in front of you instead of that sort of single-minded, every man for themselves attitude that normal commuters have.
You don't have to go to work. Just tell them. Just tell them, I have decided you're going to carry on paying me, but I am not going to be turning up for work
anymore. I have
anymore.
To go because our baby keeps eating, and the eatiness costs money.
I have to go because I keep eating, and that costs
actually,
money.
I keep eating as well.
In my experience, if you have strong union representation and work for a big enough organisation, you don't have to go to work. Just get a bit stressed every now and then.
This is not the 1970s anymore, unfortunately. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? All that. Well, they don't get paid when you're on strike.
No. Do you not?
No.
But you can go off sick. People do it. I've seen it happen.
Yeah, it's true.
Art teachers especially.
Bloody art teachers.
Those work-shy bastards. Anyway, what have I
That's
been
all
doing?
I've been doing this week.
You've been stuck on the trains the whole time.
Lamenting the state of the nation's railways.
I don't really know what I've been doing. I think lots of puppy stuff. Mm. There's a bit of a cycle. You'll know this with the babies and with having had puppies. But there's a cycle of basically you spend all of your life either trying to make sure the puppy goes to the toilet where it's supposed to, or or cleaning up after the puppy when it hasn't gone to the toilet when it's supposed to, or playing with the puppy. And then you think you're going to have a little bit of peace when the puppy eventually goes to sleep, but then you spend the whole time the puppy's asleep looking at the puppy and going, no, it's a puppy.
It is a very similar experience to having a baby, yeah.
It's very peculiar. Mm. So I think there's a lot of people who have children always poo-poo the idea, but I think there's a lot of similarities. The only real difference is a puppy is never going to grow up and hate you.
How do you know that?
They are moderately less demanding as well, I have to say.
They might grow up and hate you.
No, because dogs are relatively loyal compared to humans.
It might be loyal, it doesn't mean he likes you.
I think they like us. They like us, don't they, James?
Yeah, all dogs like us. They hate Jane, though.
Is that where this is coming from? Is that where the bitterness is coming from?
I think that's it. She's just sort of... It's her feelings about dogs, and she's laying them on us, man.
My puppy doesn't... My puppy likes Jane. She's the only person she doesn't eat.
She
jumps up.
That's how you know she doesn't like her.
She puts her head on me.
Does she not think that Jane tastes very nice?
Exactly. She doesn't favour her flavour.
Favour her flavour? Yes. Is that from a thing, or did you just make that up?
I just made... It probably is from a thing, though, because it's quite a lovely collection of words, isn't it?
If the current job doesn't ever work out, you could probably get into advertising or marketing.
I think I'd be really good at that. Actually, after reading Madame Xanadu last week, I think I'd be absolutely top. Being an advertising executive in the early 1960s.
Every advertising place has a Christina Hendricks in it.
That's right. I can be obnoxious, I can be sexist, I can smoke, and I can drink liquor during the day.
Yep.
I can do all of those things except smoking.
Well, then you would not be a good advertising executive in the 60s.
I could probably get into cocaine, though.
Oh, no,
which would qualify me for a whole chunk of...
No, they weren't doing coke, you see. No. You probably
that's
need
the
to...
80s.
Yeah, you need to be an ad executive in the 80s.
Yeah. Stupid
1960s ad
man. I don't... The worrying thing about advertising right now is I don't think they're on as much drugs as they used to be. This just seems to be how they think now. They're all just broken mentally as one. They're just idiots.
And they all seem to think that mobile phones are going to give you some sort of transcendental acid trip experience, whereas all my mobile phone has done really is alienated my friends and made people look on me as a bore, which is distressing. Although I like my phone very much, apparently to be around me when I'm using my phone is a tedious and unpleasant experience.
I can understand that.
Yeah. I should mention, actually, I've got a bit of business from last week. We were talking about...
Sorry, you got a bit of business from...
From last week, yeah. I'm turning tricks. We were talking about Waltzing Matilda.
Oh, yes.
Weren't
we?
And I was convinced that... I'm still not unconvinced that it's not about a man having sex with a blanket. But we were sent an explanation, weren't we?
We were. Who was it who sent us?
It was David who sent it. So thanks very much, David, for sending us the explanation. I'm not sure it clears much up, but thank you for sending it to us regardless.
Apparently, for most people, the words of Waltzing Matilda embody the free spirit, resourcefulness and defiance of authority associated with the Australian national character. The melody is memorable and spirited.
It is memorable and it is spirited.
But some people argue that it's a political statement... and apparently, the act of carrying the swag, an alternate colloquial term is humping the bluey.
I think that might be where I got the shagging thing from.
Oh,
maybe.
I see.
The humping the bluey, because obviously humping the bluey something.
This doesn't really clear up a lot. Matilda is an old Teutonic female name meaning mighty battle maid. In the Australian bush, a man's swag was regarded as a sleeping partner, hence his Matilda. You might be right about this.
Kind of.
Billabong is a small oxbow waterhole on the outside channel of the river. I knew that. I knew that billabong was something to do with water.
Billabong.
Perhaps Aboriginal, billa, water, bong, dead. Bong means dead.
Apparently.
That's really anti-drugs message they've got going there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't help it because we're by a window. And I've just noticed it's the second time I've seen this phenomenon in 2 days.
Is it the man with the piss?
No, it seems that young heterosexual girls need to advertise their sexuality by wearing T-shirts that say they either heart boys or heart cute boys.
I can so tell that you have recently had a daughter.
Has
life, and are looking forward to a nerve-wracking future.
Has life got that confusing now that we all have to wear T-shirts declaring our sexuality?
Or maybe it saves time.
I am married, so I am just looking. I will get a T-shirt made.
Do not
time.
Feel threatened by the married man.
I am married. I will not touch you. I will look. And I might have lascivious thoughts.
Coolabah, sometimes spelled Coolabah. Coolabah. A species of gum or eucalyptus tree. Okay. Swagman is an Australian itinerant worker.
Okay.
And Billy is a person. No, it's an open-top tin can. You see, this doesn't really clear it up. But thanks, David. Jumbuck is a sheep.
I'm still not convinced I was entirely wrong.
I think there's probably a bit of sex in it and a bit of food in it, like most things in life.
And a bit of Rolf.
A bit of Rolf.
Rolling,
doesn't everyone want a bit of Rolf in
Rolling on the floor looking at animals. Probably.
That's a bit weird.
It is.
I'm intrigued by these people out the window now. I shouldn't be.
They've gone now.
Oh, right.
So you needn't be.
But yeah, so there was that.
Mm.
Thank you for that, David. We have people, when I say people, I mean singular in each case, have been using both the Tumblr and the Gmail account to get in touch with us, and that's brilliant. But if you've got anything for us, get in touch at the momcast.
mombcast@gmail.com. And if you know where this phenomenon of wearing I Heart Cute Boys T-shirts came from, I'd love to know who started that so I can hunt them down.
Nip it in the bud so your daughter
nip it
doesn't.
In the bud. Yeah, really, realistically, we've got another 13 years really to end this. So join with me and help me end this before my daughter starts wearing I Heart Boys T-shirts.
It is going to be so much worse by the time she's of age, which is a little bit worrying.
Thanks for
no,
that.
No, that's okay. I think if I have daughters, I'm probably going to end up having to move out into, like, the wilds of Alaska or something.
I'm moving to the moon.
Get them as far away from boys as possible. Yeah. And girls with designs on them as well. I imagine that's going to be just as big a problem.
With designs on them?
Yes.
What?
My daughter's already been designed. She doesn't need... We've done it. We've done that bit.
Yeah.
That bit's done. That's fine. We don't revisit the design. Admittedly, it was like one of those AutoCAD programs in my wife's stomach. but it's done now.
I just think progressively, if we're going to worry about our daughters being seduced by men, we also have to be worried about them being seduced by women with wacky, crazy ideas.
That worries me less because women are just nicer than men, aren't they?
Or you could trust girls to do what they want to do.
Actually, Jane reminds me, most women are nicer than men.
And they might steal them away from, they might still ruin their future, stop them going to university, getting a good job, becoming a doctor.
I'm not fussed about that. Their own and do what they want to do.
Yeah, I haven't really got those expectations.
I don't really like the sound of that at all.
I'd like her to have a nice phone.
You'd like her to have a nice phone?
Yeah, but I'd like her to not be as antisocial as I am with my eye telephone.
There won't be phones by then.
Really?
It'll all be happening in the brain.
I find that far-fetched and unlikely.
Phones and sanitary products, both advertised as making, getting, allowing you to do stuff, give you a lease of life well beyond what you could reasonably expect in your normal day-to-day life, like bungee jumping and suddenly coordinating like massive things.
Roller skating with Dalmatians,
And actually neither thing. It's interesting that the two campaigns seem to work so closely together.
I think that's probably quite a good point to start talking about comics.
Yeah. Oh, do we have to?
Jane?
Comics are rubbish.
Hello. Hello, Jane.
Hello, James.
What did you get today? There is a lot of... Have you noticed when she's talking to him today, there's a lot of aggression in her
voice?
She's
in a really... She doesn't like you very
no,
much.
No, I don't know what I've done today to annoy her so.
No.
He hasn't done anything.
No.
So this is all just... You've just decided you're going to do this.
No.
I'm being victimised, listener.
You're not being victimised.
Your names are really similar.
James and Jane.
Have I noticed that before?
They are quite similar.
That's a bit suspicious. I'm feeling a bit creeped out now.
Why?
I don't, because you're both, and your surnames are both the same. I'm the only one who's
both
different.
The same.
Yeah, you're both moms.
We're both moms.
Our first names are alliterative, apart from that. That's where the similarities between us end.
Wouldn't be so sure.
So what, Jane and I have alliteration going on. So, Jane, what did you buy this week?
And why are you being so mean to James?
I'm not being mean to James.
But he says you are, so you must be.
I'm not being mean to James.
There's always the possibility I'm being paranoid.
Or you could listen back to the beginning of this podcast and see who's being mean to who.
I did. You started it. What did you buy today, Jane, for God's sake?
I bought the second issue of Welcome to Tranquility, and this week I actually have something to... I have time to talk about it. It's One Foot in a Grave is the name of the series. It's by Gail Simone and Hiroshi I can never say his surname.
Dominguez.
We need Matt to say to come on.
We could just get him on. I'll get him on Skype, it's alright. No, I'm not going to do that.
Silly comic that I really enjoyed the first issue of.
I remember.
Yes. Second issue.
You were perplexed by the first issue, though, weren't you? Because it's very different from anything else, isn't it?
I was quite surprised how much I liked it. It is very different. It's got the superhero-y sort of... thing going on, but it's still got that indie quirkiness that I quite like. It's not too mainstream. It sort of starts off this. The two main characters in this are Judge Fury and the Pink Bunny, and they're a couple. And
they're a very handsome.
They
couple,
are very handsome things, couple, yeah. And throughout the first issue, there are sort of flashbacks to in the 60s and. When they were younger and things like that, and they're in films and they're quite popular, and there's sort of other characters that are in the issues as well that they sort of hung around with at the time and things like that. It's all very cool and
hip.
It is very hip. In the first issue, Judge Fury was in prison. He'd been released from prison from killing somebody. We don't really know what's happened yet, and everyone was anticipating how he's going to be received, and it's very mixed about whether or not he did it. And it was one reporter who had basically shopped him in. I think he tried to, or seemingly tried to kill her. And she welcomed him with open arms and apologised. So it's all a bit, you don't really know what's going on. You're not really sure whether or not he's murdered somebody, and you're not really sure why she's relented so much. And so it's all a bit strange. Anyways, he's the mayor of Tranquility as well. So he's released, and his wife, Pink Bunny, prepares a party for him for his coming home. All his friends are there, and she owns like a bake shop, like a cafe, sorry, and she's made lots of food, and she's very, very, very meticulous about how she makes her food for her man and things like this. So she's still got the real 1960s pin-up.
I like the sound of this Pink Bunny.
So everything seems to go seemingly well, and then. I'll spoil it in the end of the first issue.
Oh, the first issue. This is the first.
Sorry, I'm just doing a recap quickly because I didn't really get to talk about it very much. At the end of the first issue, the mayor, the sheriff, and the deputy were all in the car driving to the party, and suddenly they kind of crashed. But there was a supernatural force. Involved.
Forces them off the road.
Yes, forces them off the road, and this is where it picks up. The sheriff's okay, but the deputy's quite badly wounded. So, the car's just about to go up in flames. They're trying to get him out. Meanwhile, Judge Fury's been taken away by the force.
Ah.
Yes. So nobody knows where he is. It's sort of switching back to the party as well, and also at the end of the first issue, an unexpected guest came to the party who is Mr. Articulate, who you also hear about him when they're flashing back to the 1960s as well. And it seems like there's a rivalry between Mr. Articulate and Judge Fury over the Pink Bunny. Mm-hmm. So, but apparently he died. Yeah, apparently a couple of weeks before he died, and now he was there not as a zombie.
Just as a as a not dead person.
As a normal person, as a live person. So,
this sounds very peculiar.
It is very peculiar. Yeah. So this is going on at the party. Judge Fury has been taken away and is being tormented by the supernatural force. And you've got the deputy trying to look after... the sheriff trying to look after her deputy. The funny thing about this is Mr. Articulate, they're all saying he died 3 weeks ago and that he was... I think he came back as a zombie. And now he's alive. So they do a test. There's...
This sounds very, very confusing.
I love it. Don't. So they do a test. There is actually a zombie in the friend group called Zombie Zeke,
mm-hmm.
who's actually a recording artist.
This is quite an unusual cast of characters.
It's excellent. It's brilliant. So so they ask him, can't you tell if he's a zombie or not? So he does a zombie test, and he takes a shovel and smacks it around the back of his head.
Oh, I assume when he said that he'd have like a zomdar.
Yeah, that's what I thought, and I think what they thought. But
is that
no.
The royal way?
It's you sever the head, and if it doesn't still shuntle around, then it wasn't a zombie.
No, I think wrong, he just whacked him on the back of
that's
the head.
A tried and tested method of testing for witches, zombies. Yeah. Mm. Kill them. If they die, they're not the thing you think they are.
Yeah.
Anyways, so he's 100% human, which is puzzling to everybody.
But now has concussion, presumably.
Possibly. Who knows? Maybe he should get checked out.
He should. Concussion can sneak up on you, I learnt today from a comic.
Did you? Which comic was that? Sorry for
I'll talk about it in a minute.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Finished?
That was quite aggressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was. She's really scary.
She gave me a look, right? We'll see. I'm sure
we're going to have a video camera in here with us all the time.
Yeah, I think so. I really don't know what I've done to deserve this behaviour today. It's quite upsetting. It's bullying and harassment of the worst kind.
Yeah, but I think so. I think, though, that if we draw attention, maybe it's just an attention-seeking thing and
probably.
We shouldn't draw attention to it. You should just take the punishment, James.
Okay.
So you like it?
Yes.
The art's very pretty.
Oh,
it's and the writing is. What did you think I was talking about when I said you liked it?
I'm sorry. I got so wrapped up in talking about the writing. The artwork's brilliant in this. Mm. I love how each character is very cartoony but realistic at the same time. So the women are all very pin-up as well. I really like the way that the women are drawn in this. It's very pretty. It's very colourful, isn't it?
Mm, yeah. It is. It's really cool. It's very sort of a... It looks like it's got kind of a... Well, you said that there's lots of stuff about the 60s in there. Mm. It looks like it's got quite an old-fashioned style to it, which is nice.
It's vibrant.
Yes.
It is, yeah. It's a good silly read. I really like this.
Mm. I, while you were talking about that, was thinking, I wonder how many man-hours... I mean, I've watched a lot of TV and movies, so I might be slightly above the average on this, but I wonder how many man-hours... or person hours of a person's life they spend watching or reading about people trying to get out of a burning car that has crashed.
Because
it seems like I've seen it happen a lot in a lot of different things.
You'd think car manufacturers make cars a bit more robust in that sense, as it happens quite a lot.
Yeah. And there's always, like, one person always is slightly less competent at getting out than the other person. There's always a fuel line explodes. Well, they hardly ever just go up straight away.
Seatbelt snags are a constant problem, aren't they?
They're a worry. It seems to happen a lot in television and almost as much in films. I just don't know. But it feels like I've spent a lot of time... If this was Grand Theft Auto, I could just check my stats, couldn't I? I could see how many... like murders or shootings I'd seen on screen, how many car crashes I'd seen.
Maybe when we get the chips in our brains, it'll register it all for us. So
I would like that.
We'll get stats reports.
You could run a Google search on your stats, Google Analytics.
John helped me out today.
Did he?
I'd been listening to an album by the Philip Glass Ensemble, and there was a tune of theirs on there. I couldn't work out where it was from. It was from the Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, right.
Which is
the
really buggy.
Grand Theft Auto
4.
There's a whole electronic... Yeah, there's a whole electronica station on there.
Which is the 80s Grand Theft Auto? Is that Grand Theft Auto 3? No.
No, Vice City.
Vice City, yeah. Mm. Kids in America always reminds me of that one.
Yeah.
So I used to just have that playing, and then I'd do all the jumps.
You just threw your... While you were playing the game?
Yeah. No, yeah. It was on the game, so I used to play it, and then do all the really, really big jumps on Red Dead.
Oh, you pick the track that you were going to... Yeah. No, I used to do that with that. I don't do it so much with the other ones. with the more recent one.
Yeah.
But Vice City had a lot of good jumps.
It did, yeah.
When you said the Philip, because I always think of Philip Glass as being his own person, but I guess he must have an ensemble. But when you said Philip Glass ensemble, I just imagined a whole bunch of Philip Glasses playing all of the instruments.
No, he just plays the keyboards in the ensemble. But yeah, he has an ensemble for... It's yeah, it's slightly different to his modern classical stuff. I like him, you know.
It's very pretty. I like that station on Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, it's nice. As well.
So I've got the Vice City soundtrack up there somewhere.
I know, it's at the top of the bookshelf.
It's very spanky. Yes. I've looked
and admired at it on more than one occasion.
Can't have it, it's mine.
No. Steal it when you're not looking.
So everyone should pick up Working to Tranquility and have a read.
Yes. It does look really good. And I imagine it's one of those titles that maybe doesn't get the sort of attention it deserves, because it's not... It's from one of the mainstream companies, but it's not...
Wildstorm.
It's not like a particularly well-known characters or anything. So.
No.
Okie dokie, James.
Is it me?
What did you read? Is it me?
Is it me? Obviously, I picked up a few books. One that I've had a flick through, haven't had a chance to read yet, is Morning Glories. On Image. It's the first issue. Nick Spencer, Joe Yzma on the art. Seems to be a rather unusual story of kids and strange happenings. It looks very nice.
Hmm.
It's highly recommended to me.
When you say highly recommended, do you mean it was put in your standing order?
It was put in my standing order and I picked it up and I bought it like the slavish fool I am.
Yeah. It does look nice, though.
And it's quite a high price point as well, so...
You've enjoyed Nick Spencer stuff before, though, haven't you?
I'm not sure I have, to be honest with you. Do you know, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything else of his.
Is it just James at the shop? James likes Nick Spencer, so we get stuff put in there. Yeah. But I think I've read stuff by him before and it was quite good.
To be honest... He's rarely stitched me up as James at the shop, so I'll read that, and maybe if I like it, I'll talk about it next week. If I don't, I won't, so you'll know.
Yeah. You might just forget, though, so that's not really proof of anything.
Do you know, there's every chance I'll forget. So if I don't talk about it next week, I either didn't like it or I forgot. If I don't talk about it next week, email us at mombcast@gmail.com for my real opinion.
Because you could
more likely be me that I've reply.
Put an appointment.
Sorry?
You could put an appointment in your phone.
I could put an appointment in my phone. I have the technology with me.
You do?
Not going.
I wonder how many times I've heard a character in something say, "Come on, let's go."
What?
Mm.
They say it quite a lot. Yeah. Come on, let's go.
Yeah.
Huh.
See? You need the chip. You need the
I really think our lives would be better if we had a government... Well, no, maybe Google should do it. They tend to be more, good.
I'm not passing this conversation.
What other book did you get, James?
The other book I got is Mike Carey, Peter Gross, The Unwritten.
Oh, you haven't talked
I love
that,
the anyway. Covers of The Unwritten. I regret not picking it up from the beginning. I think
I would recommend getting it in trade, because I'll be honest with you, I think it probably holds together better in trade than it does single issues. It's quite a dense, winding story. Mm.
I think you mentioned that to me before.
Yeah.
The covers are always so striking. I always think, I want to buy it just for the cover. Yeah, well, even if I don't understand what's going on.
I guess that's what a cover's all about, but they are beautiful. You're not wrong. As I say, it's a dense, it's been a slow-burning story. This is the 16th issue. And essentially it's been the story of a guy called Tommy Taylor, who is the son of an author who's written a series of books about a character called Tommy Taylor, who's a wizard, very similar to J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter books. And in all honesty, the first six issues or so, I was having real trouble getting into the book. I'm not keen on Harry Potter.
So it felt like it was too keyed into that sort of...
And that's it, and I was having trouble getting past that and seeing the story that Carey was telling. John, again, gives me very good advice. I was enjoying the writing. I thought the art was lovely. And he said to me, stick with it. Carey writes slow-burning stories and you'll be rewarded in the end.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting to the point now where threads that have been laid earlier on are starting to come into a head. Events are starting to come to a head, as it were. As it were. That's not
as
right.
As it were. It's not
as
something...
As it were is not right.
It is something that people say. I don't think it means anything.
No, it doesn't, does it? It's one of those sort of...
As it was. As it is.
Yeah, as it is. As it always shall be.
Probably.
Yeah, absolutely. The story is a story about the power of stories. Jesus Christ.
I know a man called Roel Hurst who finds that infuriating, by the way. He's got a real problem with Neil Gaiman's writing because that's always about the power of stories, apparently. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I got that impression from the first few issues as well.
But it's done in a very clever way, in so much as stories have a genuine, very real impact in the real world. Okay, it's really difficult because there's a big police van out there now.
Coming to get you.
This is really quite exciting. And these stories, actually, it seems there is an underground cabal that controls stories and thereby, by extension, controls the world as well.
That's weird.
And it seems that Tommy Taylor's father is part of a battle to stop this cabal from exerting control over the real and fictional world.
Right, okay.
So, as I say, some matters come to a head here.
It's a little bit like a more metaphysical version of Fables, which is about the characters from all the stories living in this world. But, like, that's very from a fairy tale point of view. They're actual characters, sure. It's not about fiction. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's very difficult to talk about this individual issue in terms of what happens in it. Because if I told you anything, it would be... There's some quite heavy spoilers. There are some really heavy plot points in here from the story. But I think it's a book, as I said, I had trouble getting into to start with. But at this point, it's starting to pay off. And I feel relieved that I stuck with it. It's a it's a fantastic, intriguing, complex and dense story that's been superbly told. And it's as I say, it's probably best off reading it in trade, because the nature of the story, it's dense yet decompressed.
Yeah.
Because it's being told over, you know, obviously it's being told for about a year and a half now.
Yeah.
He's been telling the story. So I'd probably recommend picking up, I think the first two or three trades are out now, I'd probably recommend picking it up on trade if you're not reading at the moment. Because it's one of those things, isn't it? It's remembering details from 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And how they relate to the book you're reading,
especially
now.
Especially if details trickle through.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
A few things happen each episode, but each issue, but it kind of trickles through information.
Yeah.
The reason I didn't, I stopped after a couple of issues with that, and it was partly, I didn't hate the whole J.K. Rowling thing, but it didn't confuse me, but it meant I was having a reaction to it that wasn't just based on the work. But also, it really reminds me of a book called The Land of Laughs by a guy called Jonathan Carroll, which is really similar. It's about a guy trying to find out about his father's gone missing, and his father's a writer who wrote a story. It's really, really similar.
He
was like
a
child. And I think while I was reading it, I was thinking it didn't seem derivative, and I read Land of Laughs a really long time ago, but they were both crashing in my head.
Yeah.
So maybe I should wait. I should pick up the book and just like try and
I think
force my way through
it's
the first book.
Definitely, if I was you, I'd buy the first two trades. As I say, it took at least the first arc, and if not longer, for me to really dial into it. But it's one of those, it's paying off now, and it's satisfying, and I'm glad I stuck with it. And it looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
Grace's art is absolutely fantastic.
It's one of the things I really, when I even sort of pick up a flick through, I know I can't pick it up halfway through a story, but I just think, it's just amazing. Really striking.
Excellent book. One I haven't spoken about for a while. I think I have spoken about it on the pod, but not one I've spoken about.
Not for a really long time.
I'm continuing to enjoy it. It's one of those. It's hard to talk about it on a regular, on a regular basis, because the story kind of is what it is without spoiling it.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand.
Excellent.
I'm glad you do. And if you understand, please feel free to send me an email at momcast@gmail.com and tell me you do. To save me weeping into my pillow.
He won't weep into his pillow, but it'd be nice to hear.
What, me weeping into my pillow?
No.
You'd like to hear that?
No.
Mean.
That wasn't mean. I'd like to hear from people to say that they like it.
Yes, so would I. Thank you.
I wonder how many bits of unnecessary slow motion I've seen in action sequences that didn't really add anything to my experience of it.
Do you mean people being thrust forward by the shockwave of explosions in slow motion.
Yeah.
With their arms waving about.
I think I've probably spent at least an hour of my life seeing that exact thing happen, not counting watching the same things over again.
See, I think simple things like how many adverts have I seen in my lifetime?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, that scares a lot. Me more, I think. How much...
Actually, I think what scares me more is how many themes, songs from adverts can I remember from when I was younger. That really vexes me.
I was on my way to work today. I was thinking that there's a sound effect. There's a particular sort of sound effect that I have a particular fetish for. Fetish is a strong word. It doesn't make me aroused or anything. But it's kind of a weird sort of... it's the noise they normally use for EMPs, EMP waves or something in films. It's kind of a non-sound effect. It's sort of a... or something like that. They use it in the I think the Death Star. The beams in it.
Sure.
Make that noise. It's kind of...
Yeah,
and it's like this weird echoey reverb thing. Yeah. The weapons in Battlestar Galactica in space make that kind of noise.
Well, it was Star Wars originally. It was the sound on Star Wars that kind of invented the idea of using these very deep, bassy noises in big block. Because it's visceral, isn't it? It's sort of... It's a way for you to feel the action. I know for the first time, I didn't see Star Wars when it first came out in 77. I remember going to see the special editions when they came out of the cinema back in the late 90s. One of the things I took away from that was every time they're on the Death Star, there's that low rumbling bass sound constantly. It's sort of, but it's all about, you know, it takes you into
that. Yeah, definitely.
It's clever sound design, I hate to say it, because Ben Burtt witters on endlessly in the extra features and Star Wars films. He's a talented sound designer.
Christopher Nolan's good with sound in his films as well.
Who designs the sound on his films?
I don't know, but
if it's Ben Burtt, I'll punch myself in the face.
It was something you haven't said that in ages. Right. It was something about that Dark Knight, but it comes through in Inception as well. I just had a flash where I remembered that one of the sound effects in Star Wars, I remember that they achieved by hitting a wrench or something against high tensile. Like power
in Star Wars.
Yeah,
that's
a
lightsaber noise.
Is it?
Laser blasts.
Is it? They made it by hitting
the high tension wires. Yeah,
it's fascinating. Really
very creative, isn't it?
Very, very quickly. I think you're done talking about Unwritten, aren't you? Very, very quickly. I just want to mention Torchwood from last week.
The excellent Torchwood, written by the talented John Barrowman.
I think there's a second one out, was this week.
No, they were all variant covers for the first one.
Oh, sorry.
Annoyingly.
What, there's more than two?
Yeah. I quite like, I don't like the cover I got, but none of the others are any better. It's interesting, because the Tommy Lee Edwards art inside is just absolutely gorgeous. It's the cover's really misleading. It says John Barrowman and Tommy Lee Edwards... Not Tommy Lee Jones, as I said last week. There are actually two stories in here, both of which probably... One is a full all-in-one story. The other one is the first part in a serial.
Okay.
I think the first story is slightly longer, but obviously the second one is ongoing. First story has Tommy Lee Edwards' art and is gorgeous. That's the one that's supposedly written by John Barrowman, but is actually...
I think the script
is written by Carolee Barrowman. And... It's nice. It's not. There are comic writers working who probably write as badly. That's a really weird way around. There's nice bits in it. The story's quite interesting. There's nice bits in it, but the pace goes all to cock. And the last like three or four pages, it rushes to a conclusion that means you can see what they were trying to do with the story and the tension they were trying to build, but they didn't...
And they take it away from you,
But it never descends... It does this interesting thing of the tone never descends to the campness of the TV series. It's never silly, and that's quite nice. It keeps this kind of dark element to it. It's just a shame it rushes itself in the last bit. The serial is actually written by Gary Russell with artwork by Adrian Salmon, who don't get any sort of cover credit at all. And... is like a really it's as good as one of the good but not excellent episodes of Torchwood, and there were some good episodes of Torchwood, so I like that. It was a bit embarrassing buying it, because it's Torchwood, written by John Barrowman.
Yeah.
But it wasn't actually a bad comic at all. And the main reason I wanted to mention that as well is the two comics I have actually read from this week's haul, I don't have that much to say about, interestingly okay. enough. I bought a Deviate issue that I missed. The Iron Man 29 came out, and Thor the Mighty Avenger number 3 came out, and I'm quite looking forward to reading all of those.
I think Deviate I'm going to pick up and trade.
It's going to be good in trade.
The first arc as well. Because I did pick up the first issue of this run,
mm-hmm.
and couldn't really get into it, but really liked it. I love Brian Wood's mm-hmm. writing, but I couldn't really get into it because I was a bit like, oh, I don't really understand what's going on. So I think it's something I'll probably have to pick up.
Michael Babcock.
Who's that? Who did the sound in Christopher Nolan's
Inception film? And The Dark Knight. Interestingly, in
Batman Begins.
That was done by a lady who also in her resume had Happy Feet and the film The Fat Slags.
Oh, I'm sure she's very capable, but it's probably just a coincidence.
That's quite an eclectic collection of films she's designed the sound for.
That is a bit weird, isn't it? To be honest, the first issue of DVA, I found that and I wondered if I'd missed some continuity.
Yeah.
But I think most of it is just the way Brian Wood writes, and it feels like you've missed chunks out because you know that's a pre...
Oh, right.
You know that's a pre-existing universe. I could probably give you enough of a primer for you to be able to read this, but because the first DVA was done by Warren Ellis years and years ago, and then there's probably a whole bunch of other people have worked on it in between that you don't really need to have read. But I can give you a primer on that, and when that comes out in a book, which is almost definitely going to, you should read it. But I haven't read that issue yet. What I have read today are Day Tripper number 9 and Daredevil number 509. Now, I've been mentioning all of the Shadow... I've talked a little bit about all of the Shadowland comics so far. I've been a bit nonplussed. I've not really known what to say about them because it's difficult to tell right now whether the pacing is going to work out because it's an ongoing crossover. Andy Diggle and Anthony Johnston are good writers, but again, because of the nature of the story, it's difficult to really say how it's all going to pan out, and I'm reading it across two or three different titles. Roberto Della Torre is a really good artist, though. His art on this is great, and I think probably Matt Hollingsworth, who does the colours, probably has a lot to do with the art as well, because it's just really atmospheric art, and it's good. Basically, more ninjas, ninja, and things are just more messy. Although, interestingly, as nearly always happens with Marvel crossovers, I get the feeling the timeline's slightly confused between this and Shadowland issue 2. I'm not sure which order you're supposed to read them in. I got the checklist in the back has Shadowlands 2 before Daredevil 509, but I get the feeling there are scenes in Shadowland 2 that take place after this, if that makes sense, that this plays into. So I've read scenes that it suggested are going to happen already. But it's not been a bad crossover so far. I am a little bit worried about Matt Murdock. There was another little chunk of hype about Daredevil in the week that I know Chris has been speculating or trying not to speculate about. And she made the very valid point that I think for Daredevil fans this is difficult because it's been relatively untouched by hype down through the years.
I can't help feeling they're effing with the wrong group of
fans.
Yeah,
you're right there.
If we're smart, we'll just ignore the hype and the story will pan out the way the story pans out. One thing that does happen in this story, though, is one of my favourite all-time Daredevil characters has turned up and is part of the story, which is good. I have no idea what's been happening to her in the intervening period between the last comics I read of hers and this one, but it's Typhoid Mary.
Is it Elektra? Oh, Typhoid Mary.
Yeah, I really like her. I think she was an Anna Senti-created character, and I just really like her. And Day Tripper number 9 is all the things that the other issues of Day Tripper have been, in that it's beautifully written and beautifully drawn, but it's peculiar because it's the first one that breaks the model of all of the previous issues. And if I hadn't known that there was another issue, it wouldn't have surprised me if this had been the last one, if that makes sense.
The first page looked like a callback.
Yeah, well, that's there's a lot of that going on in this issue, and it's a lot more allegorical and dreamlike and stuff than any of the previous issues have been, which is still lovely. It's still a really interesting experience. Mm. It just confuses me as to what's going to happen in the final issue, because I figured that the final issue would be different, but this one's really different. Different in what it covers. I mean, each one's been a very, very different sort of story, but this one's the first one that's broken some of the model of what's been going on. So I'm really confused and intrigued by what the final issue is going to be, because that read like a final issue.
Obviously, that'll be next month. We both read it. I think maybe once we've done that, maybe we'll both read it and talk about it when the last one comes out.
There's a spotlight, I think.
It deserves looking at in depth, because it's been such a beautiful series, hasn't it?
I think, are we all reading it?
No, I'm not reading it. Okay. I'm reading it secondhand.
I was desperately walking around the comic shop, because I took the last one off the shelf.
Yeah,
desperately hoping one of you were buying it and hadn't picked it up, so I could be cocky.
Rub our noses in it. You're a lovely, lovely person.
No, I'm a horrible individual, but never mind. But it is great. It's a wonderful book. We're talking about hype and hype machines. I
have no idea what you're about to say.
I noticed that the highly talented Mark Millar was tweeting earlier this week, and there's a director, Tony Scott, attached to the movie Nemesis.
Oh my god, you surprise me. Mm. Really?
Of his new series.
That's gonna be a film.
Yeah, I thought Jane, you're the only one of the three of us who's reading Nemesis. Would you like to give us a quick appraisal?
You're actually reading it all.
I am.
Would you like to give us a quick appraisal of how you feel about Nemesis?
Do you want the one we were discussing earlier? Or would you like the toned-down appraisal?
Just say F less often.
Are you sure?
Less often.
Less often. What about
you can't even talk anymore.
What about head up arse?
I think did we not suggest that it reads a little bit like a storyboard, and maybe you should concentrate on writing comics not preparing storyboards?
That's pretty much it.
Okay. Jane's not a fan, I think it's fair.
It's so irritating, because there's a base of a really good story there. It could be very funny. I know Kick-Ass was a sensational. But from what I didn't read Kick-Ass, but from what I've heard from people, it didn't read like it was going to be a film. It just worked out quite well that way, whereas this feels like it's been made to be a film.
It read a bit like it was meant to be a film, actually.
It's lovely when talented comic book creators have their stories optioned and turned into films. I feel really good for them.
That's
obviously. The check helps. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, it's good.
It's exposure. It means people get into comics. They look back and they want to find out where it's come from. So that is really good.
But it's a worrying and concerning trend, I think, when people are writing purely, because it reads like a storyboard, and I don't think any of us want to read that, do we?
Part of it feels bad because Mark Millar is working on this. It's all independent. It's they're working very hard on it, but it does read like a storyboard for a film. And like I said, the frustration is it could be such a good story as a comic. They don't need to put so much effort into it
effort
into making it so film-like.
Yeah.
It could work as a story and adapt it quite nicely into a film. So it's. I don't know if I'm going to pick up or not. It was the second issue I caught up with at the weekend. The first issue left me a bit like, is this going to be a bit film? Because it's very spectacular. Mm. And the second one, I was like, this is pretty much the storyboard for a film.
It seems to be making you angry. I'd probably leave it. But there you go. 47 episodes in. We've had a negative review of something from Jane. That's not bad going, is it?
What annoys me a little bit is now I know that Tony Scott's directing it, I'm probably going to end up watching it because I like Tony
Scott. We'll all end up watching.
And it'll probably be a great film, I've no doubt.
What bothers
Jane, I suspect, is what bothers me, is don't expect us to buy a comic that's a storyboard.
Yeah.
Write a pitch, send it to one of the big studios, and maybe your pitch will be turned into a film. Don't patronise comic book fans by writing a storyboard. I think that it irritates me.
No, it is annoying because, the potential's there. So.
Speaking of comics that always had the potential to make decent films but weren't, but were actually decently written and stuff, though. Have you seen any of the trailers for Red? I know they've been around for a really long time, but it looks really good. Mm. Warren Ellis's book Red that he did with Cully Hamner.
And that makes me really happy. Mm. You know, I'm really pleased for him. And obviously, Warren Ellis has tweeted about that a little bit. I know he's bought his daughter a pony.
Yeah.
With the cheque he's received from the Royal Sinat. That's great. You know, it's a good story, and it's a good story that's now been turned into what hopefully a great film. I think, good luck to Mark Millar. I mean, he's having a great few years. His career's going really well. I feel really happy for him. I'm worried about what he's doing to the comic book industry at the moment. He might say I'm just being a miserable bastard.
By being as successful as he's being, going along the model he's going, I think, I think it's right to be a little concerned that people will see creating superficial, like paper thin comics as a way to making big bucks isn't going to help anyone.
Yeah.
But not least the people who pour their work into that and then end up not being as famous as him.
Yeah, and I know as comic book fans we don't have to buy it. My fear is, if the movie's successful, this type of book is going to saturate the market, and then that becomes a real issue for people who are telling original, bold stories, much like the people who are responsible for the webcomics that you were going to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Before I mention that, one thing that's confused me a little bit is, I think Mark Millar's only really become properly active on Twitter recently, hasn't he?
He's been there, I'm going to sound really... I don't want to sound that, because he's written stuff I really, really like.
Mm.
1985 in particular, I'm really fond of. He's a publicist, isn't he?
Our cynicism, I think, is based on the fact that he's more hype than productive.
Yeah, and I'm also concerned that it's almost feels trendy to knock him at the moment, but then he sticks his head above the parapet.
I've been knocking him since we started the podcast.
He becomes very active when he's got something to sell you.
Mm. But I basically only really became aware of him on Twitter recently, and at the same time, one of my favourite writers, whose name is Martin Millar, also just started using Twitter, and he's one of my favourite novelists. He has written a comic a really long time ago, but based on some of his characters, but. So I keep seeing his name come up and thinking, what's Mark Millar on about now? And then realise, and it's very confusing. That's a really interesting story.
Yes, thank you for sharing it.
The thing you mentioned, the webcomics.
Yes. I tried to segue you in before that interesting story.
Sorry about that. There's a few webcomics that are going to be, that I really like, that are going to be coming to a close fairly soon. In one case, I think it's only a temporary situation, but two of them... and it's been announced for a little while, but they're two of them, it's been announced for a little while that they're going to be finishing, but one of them actually did finish today. Mm-hmm. And those are the two main ones that probably aren't going to be coming back are The Everyday by Adam Caldwell, I think it is. And that actually finished today. It had its final page up today. And Elebisms, which I've been following much more closely, by Mark Ellaby.
You spoke about when you went to Thing.
Yes. Which I know is going to be finishing, I think, at the end of next week. I think it's next week, and he's going to be posting one strip a day for the next week until the end. Cadwell has always said that The Everyday was going to go to 200. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of finished on quite a normal note.
Mm-hmm.
The final one was quite normal, although there are some very funny people like Mark Ellaby and John Allison, who does, I can't remember what his webcomic is called, but it's excellent. It changed names recently, that's why I can't remember what it's called. It used to be called Scary Go Round. Have all done, and a bunch of other people as well, a bunch of fans have all done sort of final strips, for projected final strips for The Everyday, and I think they're doing it for Elebisms as well, and they're quite fun. Mark Ellaby's for The Everyday was very funny, but I believe even though they're finishing, the backlog of them is going to stay up. So that's The Everyday by Adam Caldwell, and Elebisms by Mark Ellaby. Both really worth checking out their archives.
Do you know why Mark Ellerby's finishing Ellerbisms?
I think he's found that doing the diary comic has been, while satisfying, it has locked him into working in a particular style in a particular way on like non-fiction, on like the private stuff when and real stuff when he'd quite like to be doing other stuff. Chloe Noonan, that was the comic I picked up. Yeah, I don't know if you remember at the thing, I picked up Chloe Noonan thinking, well, I like his diary stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure I want to see him write about a monster fighter.
Uh-huh.
But it was excellent.
Yeah.
And I think he might find that stuff a little bit more satisfying. He does go into it a little bit in and quite openly in the final few strips, so it's worth checking out. The other and it's been a really good run on both of them, so thanks to those guys for doing the diary comics. I know they're very sort of personal and probably take quite a toll on them over time. More Mark Ellerby than Adam Caldwell, whose life basically seems to consist of kissing attractive ladies.
What a hard life.
And being a cute little man. But yes, thanks to them for being so like awesome for all this time, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they'll be doing next. Also announced as finishing quite soon is Jamie Smart's Wobble.
Jamie Smart's excellent
Wobble, which is just quite a lovely, silly. It's a more traditional newspaper strip style, like a three-panel newspaper strip style webcomic. That's basically just about office politics and nonsensical, stupid stuff that happens in an office. But it's more whimsical than Dilbert or anything like that. It's just more fun.
Quite regularly get attached to emails and emailed round my office.
Yeah. I think where Dilbert seems to be more about the manager experience and the executive level experience, really. Wobble was just like about silly stuff that goes on in the office. And I don't think he's putting it on hiatus, which I think he has done before because he's getting quite busy. He's always got a few things on. He does the excellent Bear as well,
which I think new Bear will be up at the end of the year, he was saying.
Yeah, he did mention that. But even that went on a really long hiatus. But I think he's actually getting quite a lot of... I know he's doing some children book work, I think. So he hasn't said he's finishing it for good. He's just saying it's going on hiatus. But Wobble, definitely worth checking out. I'm sad that that's not going to be there for a little while.
While they're not there, everyone should go and look at pictures of sad children.
You love pictures of sad children today, don't
so
you?
I'm so addicted for not just today. It's been the last couple of months. I just can't stop going to pictures for sad children. It's just... it's almost like I've overdosed on whimsy. It's horrible.
We were talking about it. It basically is a very satisfying way to remind yourself that all life is meaningless.
And of course, there was a new episode last week of the excellent Particle Fiction.
Oh yes,
yeah.
Which
by who's that by?
That's by David Wynne, that's a collaboration. I forget the guy he's collaborated with. I'm really embarrassed. But
it'll say in the credits.
It's a very, very strange, very unusual episode this week.
I haven't read it yet, actually, but I saw a preview of the art, and it's really different for him, isn't it?
I like it. It's very good. I'll be honest with you. It took me a couple of reads because, as I say, it is linear, but it requires a little thought. But no, it's excellent. That's another one of my favourite webcomics.
Because normally his comics are pretty mindless, aren't they?
Aww,
Only
that
joking.
Was naughty.
Only joking, David.
I will kick him in the knee for you, David, when we're finished.
You're already... people are basically telling you to torture me today. Lou from Forbidden Planet was telling you to tie me up.
You were coming on to her.
I wasn't.
And I was suggesting to her that if needs be, I'll restrain you when we go into the shop.
She said that she didn't... that people obviously think they're funny, but they're not. And all I said was...
You kept going...
But what about me? What about me?
And then it was all grin, grin, wink, wink, grin.
There wasn't winking. If you go back and read the timeline, it'll make more sense.
No, I'd rather use my rather sketchy and unreliable memory.
I hate you people. Not you, Jane. You're all right. I mean him.
Okay.
You hate me people. Yeah. You have been collaborating all day.
James, you're so paranoid.
You're such a drama.
There's a reason for that, which I'm not prepared to go into right now.
No.
Hmm.
Should we talk about virgins?
Let's listen to you talk about American Virgin, which I notice you've just done your research for.
I haven't.
Have you just been writing down the names of the characters?
Only because I suddenly went, I can't remember the main character's name, and I only read this yesterday, so that's good memory, isn't it?
Those are probably exactly the same notes that the writer made.
Do you know, I started,
when laying out the whole story for himself.
I was reading my Tintin book for my next Tintin piece last week. I kind of thinking, Jane, I'm putting a little more into this than some of us.
But you make it look effortless.
Every time you touch me, I think you're going to hit me.
Oh, sorry. Just so we better address that. I said something nasty to Jane, but to reassure her here in the room, I just touched her shoulder a little bit.
But it made me jump.
Yeah.
She flinched.
I just wanted to reassure her that I was only joking.
I can't help but think that something awful has passed between these two in the past.
I'm really glad we didn't address that. So that was just a silent moment that just went.
Don't you want to hear about virgins?
And I was able to silently reassure you.
James doesn't care about virgins.
You don't care about virgins?
Tell us about
the
comic.
They're no good to me.
For goodness sakes. Oh, those are Frank Quitely covers.
Oh, these two are. The rest aren't.
He got burnt out after the first
three, because I'm missing the second issue. Oh, I'm not missing. The person I borrowed this from is missing the second issue.
So you're doing the spotlight on a story you haven't read all of it.
So this goes up to issue 9. It's 23 issues, which, to my horror, I realised last night.
You know when you listen to a podcast for a really long time, James? Don't know if you listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
And there's always that point after a while where you just sort of think, you know, it's not as good as it used to be.
Yeah.
They're just not putting as much effort into it.
I borrowed these a long time ago. I thought it was everything and then remembered it wasn't.
Yeah, well, it's good. It's nice that you're preparing so far in advance, so you're organised.
Yeah, exactly. Months ago I borrowed these to spotlight for today.
You're not really getting what I'm saying to you, are you?
If you don't start talking about this book soon, I'm going to know far too much about
I'm
that
just
advert.
Go home.
About the advert on the back of it. So
there's lots of them like that.
It's about a car. Photocopying its ass. That doesn't make sense.
I'm going on the internet.
Hey!
See if you can find the second issue, third issue.
Well, I bet I know more about this by the end.
Do you want me to talk about this or not?
Yeah, go on.
I've been looking forward to this all day. American Virgin.
Yeah, so have we.
Written by Stephen T. Segal and Becky Cloonan.
Not Stephen Segal, James. James perked up when you said Stephen T. Segal. I also cook. Not him. Not that guy.
And Becky Cloonan.
Becky Cloonan. That's the closest you can get to her now, isn't it,
no,
James?
No, it's not. I can get closer.
That was deliciously
that sounded creepy.
As Nick rightly pointed out, the first three covers are by Frank Quitely, and then after that it's by Joshua Middleton.
Oh, he's lovely. Yeah. His art's lovely. I don't know if he's a lovely person.
Yes.
He might have a cold, dead heart.
No, well, that's a lovely cover, so yeah.
His covers are beautiful.
Okay. Like I said, this is only the first two arcs in the series, which is issue 1 to 4, which is called Head, and 5 to 9, which is Going Down. I'm just rude or something on this.
Is it that they sound like rude things?
Yeah.
You wrote that down. You read the comics, and then you wrote down the names of the arcs, and you only just realised they sound a bit rude.
Well, I did. I have an innocent mind.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay.
No, you're an idiot.
Anyway, American Virgin is about an American virgin called Adam. He's abstained from having sex before marriage. He's become quite infamous for it. He gives lectures and he's written a book about it. So he's a very devout Christian. He's also got a lot of charisma and charm and... has a lot of girls eating out of the palm of his hand that he has
but
to...
only out of the palm of his hand, James.
Like pigeons.
Yes.
Yes.
He has to resist. So he's 21 and he's a virgin. And he is engaged to his girlfriend, Cassie, who is in Africa in the Peace Corps doing lots of lovely things for the African nation.
I think I remember how this first issue plays out, actually, thinking about it. I think I read this first issue. Okay,
you look
quite
shocked.
Yeah, no, it just occurred to me. It's okay, go on. It doesn't quite go the way I was expecting it to.
No, Adam is obviously trying to spread the word. He's going around. He's got a book tour coming up, and his girlfriend Cassie is obviously in Africa, and she's coming back in a week's time. In the first issue, you pick up that there's something not quite right with Cassie. She's got something she needs to tell him on the phone, but he's a bit busy and not really concentrating. Adam also has the best character, his mum. I can't remember his mum's name now. Mammy, I think they call her.
Wasn't it Al Jolson's mum?
Yeah.
And she...
Common name.
She is like a really wicked, pushy soccer mum type character, and she's really pushing him to go onto TV and to spread the word, and she pretty much wants to dominate and take over the world. And her second husband, Earl, who has a very jaded past, you find out during the book, and Earl has... I think it's two sons and a daughter from a previous marriage, who obviously is Alex's stepbrothers and sisters, and Alex also has a real brother called Kyle as well, who are all very different. They all claim to be Christians, because Earl is a TV minister, actually, so they're all Christians, but they are not as devout.
They're not all as pure as he is.
As Adam, so... Yeah, so he finds he's got all these frustrations going on, and he's trying to deal with lots of urges and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it starts off all very... You don't really know where it's going to go at first. You just think, where is this going to go? You don't know where it's going to go. Everyone is trying to trip Adam up at every point. Mm-hmm. There is something very lewd or suggestive trying to get Adam to stray off his path.
Yeah.
And he always turns the situation around so that he ends up saving or giving words of wisdom to the person who's trying to corrupt him. And it always works out very well. He does give in to a few physical temptations.
Don't we all?
But he's still holding out for Cassie.
What are you doing with your ring?
I'm hot.
She was doing the taking it off and putting it back on again. And the topic you were talking about made that seem a little suggestive. Sorry.
Okay.
She's concentrating.
I'm sorry, Jane.
And you're playing with your phone. You're on Twitter.
Yeah.
James.
That is not playing
That's
the game.
Not fair.
Karen, anyways, I'm listening to you, Jane.
Anyways, tragically, Cassie is beheaded by a terrorist organisation. So Adam is very distraught and needs to find out, has to go to Africa and recover her body. He enlists the help of his stepsister Cindy, who's obviously very extreme to him, and they enlist the help of a guy called Mel, who seemingly knows where to go at what point and who they need to speak to. He seems to be very conveniently in the know, which later on in the story you find out why. But they go to Africa, they find out some clues there, and they fly the body back to America, and then some more clues are brought to light there, and then they end up in Australia. And I think that's... I can't remember which issue that was. That was one of the funniest issues, which was issue 7, actually, where they end up going to an S&M club to find the main killer who killed his fiancé. And he has to get dressed up, and he gets snapped by the paparazzi, and...
In
all full-out gear and things like that, and he's undercover. There's still the conflict he has about when he finds these people, what is he going to do to them, because obviously it's going to be against his religion to seek their revenge and kill them, but he's so enraged that he's not really thinking completely straight. He meets some very interesting characters along the way. Everyone's slightly damaged in this. Every character apart from Adam is damaged, so it's quite interesting to see how they react to him and his beliefs and how he reacts to them. At the end of the second arc, which is going down, you find out Mel's
still got a funny name.
You find out Mel's motivations is that a year ago his fiance had been killed, not quite so personally as in filming of beheading or anything, but as part of an explosion from the terrorist group. So mm-hmm. he's sort of been using Adam to get to these places, because Adam's quite well off and things. Yeah. So this transpires, and they manage. Actually, Mel seeks revenge on one of the killers, and that's pretty much where the end of the second arc finishes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the last part, last page, which is when I went, oh God, there's more of these. I didn't know. I forgot there was more of them. Was there on the plane going from Australia back to America, and the plane crashes in water into the sea. And I was a bit like, oh, there's more. I forgot there was more. Yeah. So I'll be reviewing. I will be spotlighting the other three.
So does anything else happen? No, it's okay.
What do I mean?
No, that's fine.
Does the bald eagle land safely?
No. So we're desperate to find out whether or not Adam's going to seek his revenge, find out why she was killed.
I am now as well.
There was also, there was claims that Cassie had been raped, but from the sort of information they've had from some of the guys that they've hunted down, she wasn't raped by anybody in the terrorist group. And, yeah, exactly.
I'm just... No, nothing, it's fine.
And Cassie had been sharing lodgings with a roommate, Natalie, and another guy, I can't remember his name. And it would seem that there was something going on between her and the guy. So this could be what she was trying to say on the phone to Adam right at the beginning. So it'd be interesting to find out whether or not she was...
All this next week on American Virgin.
Because it's not still running, is it?
No, it's finished. There are three other arcs, which are... There's five in total. So there's Head, Going Down, Wet, Around the World, and 69.
No, they're all perfectly innocent.
yeah, definitely. Around the World is because they're travelling around. That all makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and Wet is because
they're playing
crashed.
With yo-yos. that's
and Going Down is because they went to Australia. Mm. And Head is because she's beheaded, so...
Yeah.
Tell us about the writing and the art.
Yes. The writing... the writing's excellent. It's very witty. You kind of want to hate Adam just because he's a bit smarmy, but you don't. The charm that he has comes through quite nicely on the pages. His sister Cindy is one of my favourite characters as well. She's excellent. She's a real firecracker, and she's real free spirit, but she still kind of has her Christian way. She's not completely bad to the core or anything like that, but she knows how to have fun. She's a really good girl.
Spunky.
She is.
She's full of spunk.
even some of the more lewd scenes are still written in a tasteful way, so it's not so... Even though they are sort of looking at it and reading it, you think, oh, this is a bit, you know, like, hee-hee-hee. But at the same time, you just think, oh, it's not anything too much to flinch at. It's just, it works so well in the story, so...
He could have gone for a really sort of heavy satirical...
Yeah, really explicit, like, but he seems to have gotten the balance just perfect, so I've really enjoyed that. Becky Cloonan's art. It's so weird seeing it
in colour, isn't it? Yeah, I did wonder what it would be like. It does look pretty good.
It is good. Again, I mean, it's so different to the demo art. And like we all sort of agreed on demo, her artwork was progressing through and through the stories. And I think it's the same with this. You can see it progressing with each issue as well. It's different to how it is in demo. And it does look very old, coloured in.
Coloured in.
Yeah, sorry.
With crayons.
No, with crayons.
Oh, dear me.
Sorry, I didn't mean that, listeners. I meant coloured.
Listener.
But the... No, we've got more than one, remember?
I find it hard to believe.
But
you think it's all just David putting on voices making fake accounts all over the place?
And dancing the fandango.
He's the only person we've really seen, actually, in real life, David Wynn. That isn't like one of our friends already.
That we know of. We might have seen other people in the flesh and just not known it.
Do you mean you think they come to Southampton to be near us but don't announce themselves?
Yep.
That's a little bit weird.
Yeah, well.
So, David, I hope you're listening to this. I thought I'd say, Becky Coon's black and white art, though. I mean.
Do you love her black and white art more?
I do. It kind of tips it for me. It is, yeah, of course.
But you do like it.
I do like it. I mean, it's just the way she creates such ambient scenes through demo, just literally with her pencil. So that's one of the things I really, really like about her art.
It is recognisably her art, though,
yes,
isn't it
definitely is. I mean, the face is definitely... She draws such pretty faces, even for the guys. Mm. They're still masking, but they're gorgeous. And she draws fantastic girls as well. So... her artwork. It was a real pleasure to see how her art was before demo and see it coloured as well. Mm. So I've really enjoyed this. And I will review the next three arcs.
I might look for that in trade.
When I persuade someone to lend them to me without them laughing at me too much.
Who laughs at you?
When I sent a text saying, oh, I forgot there was more than 9 issues. And he said, yes, don't you remember?
I don't think it's nice when people mock someone for being a bit clueless. Okay. I don't mean you're a bit clueless. That isn't what I mean.
Oh, Nick, you're so subtle.
I'm an arsehole. That was very good. Thank you
much. Thank you. I'm so sorry.
And I'm sorry you had to put up with my distracting ways.
You're such an antisocial cock, Andy.
can you film me next week when I'm doing my Tintin bit? I want her to watch herself.
Yeah, to be fair, I think I'm the only one who's really attentive all the time.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, it's true. You're both ignorant assholes.
We're not. Well, James is. I'm not. Well, you were the one. I've never once sat here on a social network talking to my friends how I'd rather I was with them.
Next week, webcam. That's us, I think. I don't know if anything really... did anything really exciting happen in the week in comics that we haven't already covered?
There's nothing exciting. We should probably mention that it's the third anniversary.
Oh, yeah. Was it today or was it yesterday?
Yeah, it's today.
Today was the third anniversary of Mike Waringo's death. Mike Waringo was a comic artist who worked on, among other things, Fantastic Four and... I'm trying to remember, he did a creator-owned book which had a talking tiger, like tiger, it's like a fantasy book. But as much of an impact as he made with his comic art, which was absolutely beautiful art, he, I think, made almost more of an impact in the wider comic community. I remember him from Warren Ellis's The Engine message board forum. But I know he was very active in the art scene, and he was always really encouraging of up and coming artists. Even when he was very busy working actually in comics, he was always taking part in and giving sort of reflected attention to like comic art projects that were going on online, and taking part in fan projects and stuff like that. A really, really amazing comic artist who I've sold short by just remembering the Fantastic Four stuff he did, but like I said, I mainly remember a lot of the remodel versions of characters like Flash Gordon that he did online. Yeah. But by all accounts, an absolutely incredible person to know and work with. I never actually met him, but everybody who ever worked with him or met him just was... I remember that, although we've talked about Al Williamson and Frank Frazetta and Harvey Pekar dying, they were very much an old guard of...
Yeah.
An old guard of creators. Mm-hmm. I remember when Mike Waringo died, and it was like...
The
comic internet was bereft. Yeah. So
that's the flow we've been getting today. Yeah. Well. There's quite a few people have been talking about it on Twitter. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing artist. Everyone remembers him. And yes, it's the third anniversary of him dying. It's very sad.
Thank you, Matt, for reminding us.
Yes. Well, yeah. It's been on it. I think I wasn't sure whenabouts it was, but I think it's a few people have mentioned it today. Yeah. So the thing about Mike Waringo is his... examples of his art are always kind of circulating, because whenever anyone does a remake or remodel thing of any character, or whenever someone brings up one of the characters that he did like a drawing of, people like sharing his versions on them because they're always fucking awesome.
So it's sort of
he's always kind of present.
Yeah.
His work's always around, and I think his family left his... he was like... he blogged quite a lot. He put quite a lot of his own art up online, and I think his family have left his site up. I think his brother or somebody has actually left his site up. Certainly, it was up for a very long time.
We can share the link.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for reminding us.
No, well, thank you, Matt.
you, who is probably just David putting on an accent.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was nice speaking to David with an accent the other
way. Mm. I think that Chris is the most impressive voice he does, though.
Yeah.
It is. He sounds very attractive.
Sounds well, quite attractive when he's both Matt and Ryan as well. So it's sort
of... he's all round lovely.
Mm. Yeah,
he's my favourite bear and hippie.
Yeah, but he's our mum crush, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
On that note,
if I wasn't so married,
he's got a dreamy James.
Has anyone got any plans this week? My dad's over from Cyprus, so that's what I'm doing at the weekend. He's visiting.
That's very much a statement out of the way.
Well, it's always perplexing. I love seeing my dad, but he's very nervous of dogs, so he can never visit the house. So we always go up, and so it's always fun, but there are always practical needs,
it's
things to get over.
Parents, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
And also, my friends, two of my friends have moved back from living in London for ages. They've moved close by, so we'll be seeing them. And I'll be getting my arms bitten to hell by Willow the puppy.
Good.
Aww.
Who is very bitey. What about you guys? What are you doing?
I'm probably just going to go out with my little family and do little family things at the weekend.
Aww. That's cute.
That is cute.
Anything in particular, or is that the most you can
give us?
No,
nothing in particular. We just leave the house.
Damn it.
And I'm going to play poker Saturday night, which isn't little family stuff at all.
It occurs to me that anyone who literally only tuned in for last week's or who hasn't really been paying attention for all this time may have got the wrong impression. I love babies and I very much love James's.
Yeah.
I very much love James's daughter. She is very, very cute indeed.
Thank you very much. She is lovely.
It's just jealousy. You can't get by the envy.
Last week we ended on an apology. This week we're ending on sincerity.
Yeah.
I don't like the way this is going.
A sincere disclaimer.
Like all the enmity the whole way through the podcast. And then we end with this nice note.
Because we're friends, really.
Yeah, and then we hug after.
No.
Yes, James. Don't force it.
I don't mind it when you touch me.
What are you going to be doing, James?
I'm going to be reading the rest of American Virgins.
Except for flinching.
I'm going to be looking for virgins.
You're going to be looking for fire engines?
For virgins.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes.
American fire engines.
Amongst other social
was
events.
Was it Reeves made the joke that, isn't it the comedian who used to be paired with Dustin G had the same name as French fire engines?
Who was that?
Les Denis, because all fire engines used to be Dennis.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Les Denis.
It's a long way to go for a gag, though, isn't it?
It was.
I'm glad I shared it.
Well done.
I like that you went in that direction with Les Dennis. Mm. Pretty sure he was more famous on his own, wasn't he?
I know, but I didn't want to say his name before I mentioned the gag, and I couldn't think of any other way. Maybe Family Fortunes would have been relevant.
Mm.
To the UK people. Mm.
Yeah.
Who watched it.
Yes.
Right. Maybe we do hate each other after all.
No, I love you guys. This is fun, and this is the first time I haven't been stressed out before recording over here.
Really?
We got it.
There were no hiccups yet.
Yeah.
So far, there's a few seconds left.
Yeah, you haven't published this to the interwebs yet. Yeah. Yeah, don't touch the wood because the mic will pop.
Shit, hang on. It hasn't been recording.
No, it has. Never mind. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, David.
We hope you enjoyed it.
And David and Mark and everyone else. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. You're all awesome. And
please email us. We love hearing from you.
Thank you for watching our video. If you've watched our video,
and if you haven't watched our video, go look for it. And
don't confuse it with Mumcast.
Oh, Mumcast. Yeah, there's a Mumcast, isn't there?
Yeah, we should start a web war with them.
I don't think we should. I suspect that if it's called Mom, it's going to be one of those things that there's a very active mummy mafia on the internet. Ooh. Isn't there? You don't want to get on the wrong side of them.
Love mums.
But it's Mom, M-O-M-B cast.
Mom cast.
M-O-M-B.
We are going to have a... What number are we on? What was this week's?
47.
We're about three episodes off our number 51. Mm-hmm. So, it's becoming quite difficult for us to work out stuff to talk about other than this week's comics. So if you've ever got any suggestions, especially for the 50th, do get in touch with us.
And John will be on the 50th too.
You should tell us if you think we're shit too, because we'll never learn otherwise.
But I'll probably cry if you do. Anyway, thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening, listeners.
Bye-bye. Maybe you need to project your voice, Jay.
Shall I project my voice like this, Jay?
But then we're just three people shouting in a room.
He was part of the bombshell at the end of Widening Gaia. Six issues, right? Kevin Smith's Widening Gaia. Boring as bollocks for 5.5, with the most incredible jaw-dropping ending of any comic book I've read for some time.
Is that the one where he says that Batman pissed himself?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
It's pathetic.
In the, but that was okay, I didn't mind that, but the ending was excellent.
What?
I was just waiting for you to finish yawning before I start.
Oh, sorry.
You don't have to be you don't have to be that aggressive. If you can choose whether to be that aggressive or not, you know.
I'm choosing to be.
Well, maybe I'm going to choose to be aggressive.